Three things. One, I had served as governor for 6 years, and in that time had formed a rapport, if you want, with the people of the state, and had worked extremely hard at doing a good job as governor. I think the people appreciated that, so that was a big plus. Secondly, the Democrats did have a pretty rugged primary, and there was a good deal of bitterness, and that always helps another candidate. But you're right, it's the first time in 46 years that Rhode Island sent a Republican to the U.S. Senate. But I do find this about the people of Rhode Island. They are pretty independent, and they will support Republicans on the big offices. They don't tend to vote for them for the state legislature, something where you tend to vote your party more than the individual. But on the state or national level, they'll vote for Republicans.
Senator Chaffee, you're a moderate Republican, or would you prefer a modern Republican?
I don't know.
But the great majority of your colleagues, taking both House and Senate together, are very, very conservative, and really are unlike you in basic philosophy. Do you sometimes feel uncomfortable?
No, and I'm not sure that you're completely accurate there in that statement that the great majority, and let's just take the Senate itself. We just came back from a vote on the HEW appropriations bill. Well, now there you'd find people like Brooke, Hatfield, Packwood, Weicker, Heintz, Danforth, I don't know how he voted, but certainly you could name, of the 38 Republicans, you could name 17, 18 who are in the moderate side of the equation.
You're still outvoted.
Yeah, I suppose they are, but you know, I think it's very hard to stereotype people. For instance, on the Panama Canal Treaty. Now, you might think that's a watershed. The conservatives are going to vote against it. The liberals will vote for it. Yet, certainly, Barry Goldwater, whose credentials don't need any examining as far as where he stands in the spectrum, he's going to vote for it. He's for the Panama Canal Treaty, the negotiations. But you're right. Basically, the Republican Party is many of the Republicans in the Congress and the Senate are on the conservative side of the picture. And many of them have won. That is, they've knocked off strong.
Looking ahead, let's say, to next year, don't you think the broader your party base is, the better off you are?
Oh, sure. I mean, I think it's absolutely essential that our party appeal to all sides of the spectrum. There's nothing unique about doing this. I mean, it isn't so we're prostituting ourselves when you think that you got people like Culver or Clark and Jim Eastland in the same party. That's a pretty broad spectrum they've got in the Democratic Party. So I'm glad that in our party we can have Javitses and Goldwaters.
But there isn't the churning in the Democratic Party on the part of the Eastlands to push out the Culvers or the Clarks, and there seems to be a constant churning within your party to purify it.
Yes, and that is so unfortunate that those that espouse the true faith of conservatism seem to feel that this is the way the party must be completely identified, and I think that's unfortunate. And but we've had the so-called liberals, if you want, in the party have had their day in court and their support, and I think we'll do even better in the future.
Chaffee, I have some more questions for you in just 1 minute. Chaffee, you've had a most interesting career. You're an attorney, 6 years active duty with the Marine Corps, served in the Rhode Island House of Representatives, and served there as minority leader, and then you were elected governor and re-elected twice. And from 69 to 72, you served as Secretary of the Navy, and then last year you were elected to the Senate. Let's talk just a little bit about the Senate. And of course, you had good training for it, being across the river as Secretary of the Navy, observing it, and also testifying up here on the Hill. Now that you're on the inside, how does it measure up or down to what you had expected from the outside?
I think the one thing that struck me, Joe, very forcefully when I got here was the incredible power of a single senator. Now, traditionally, people have remarked that the Senate or the Congress is essentially a body that has a veto power. It's negative rather than positive. But I found if you pay attention in your subcommittees and in your committee, and then you get on and the bill, you get your provision in the act, and then the bill goes to the floor, and then you get in the conference committee, that an individual who pursues an idea can have a tremendous influence way beyond the feeling that what I would have originally thought. And I don't mean some bull that's been around here for 20 years. I'm talking about a freshman senator
who came in in January
and pays attention. And
I'd like you to elaborate that pays attention. What you mean is you've got to know what you're doing.
I think you've got to know what you're doing, and also you've got to concentrate your fire. There are so many things to do, just committee-wise. For instance, I happen to be on the Environment and Natural Environment and Public Works Committee, which is one committee, and then I'm on the Human Resources Committee. Well, now, and then subcommittees of each of those. If you try to go to all your committee and subcommittee meetings, you'll end up just running around like a chicken with your head cut off, doing none of the jobs well. But if you say, all right, now I can't possibly do all these things well, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to concentrate on, in my case, I will pay a lot more attention to clean water and the Clean Air Acts than I will to activities in the Human Resources Committee. And now, that doesn't mean I'll just slough that off completely, but I'll concentrate in these other things. And I've noticed these fellows who seem to get a lot done concentrate in one area or another.
Have your priority.
You got to have your priorities. What's most interesting to you? And that doesn't always mean that it's just the thing that affects your state most. Many times people get involved in activities that aren't solely parochial, but just that's what they're interested in.
One of the big pushes under J.B. the Carter administration is the so-called instant registration, or let's have everybody voting whether they're registered or not, Bill. You've looked this over. What do you think of it?
It seems to me it's a classic case, Joe, of big brother government, federal government, saying, look, we really know best about this, and you fellows out there in those 50 states, your Secretary of States, boards of elections, whatever they might be, you're a little stupid, so we're going to come along and show you really how to do this. Now, in support of this election day registration, they constantly cite Minnesota. That's the holy grail these days, to emulate Minnesota, because in the last election of 1976, Minnesota had 75% turnout, or whatever it was, and that's meant to be super. Well, what they failed to tell you is that sure, Minnesota had a big turnout. Minnesota does have a voting day registration, but Minnesota also had two candidates from Minnesota, Humphrey running for the Senate, Mondale running for Vice President, that stirred up a lot of interest and got people out. Furthermore, they don't tell you that Minnesota has traditionally had a large turnout, and as a matter of fact, in the 1976 election, which everybody cites, they don't point out that there was a lower turnout in that election with this voting day registration than there was in 1972 when they didn't have that registration. So the important point is not getting more people registered. Yes, that's important, but that's not what's holding up the adequate number of voters. The problem is getting those who are registered to come out and vote. And in our state, we find that we get the people registered. We have night registration. All touring people go around to register people. We've got our people registered, all right, but it's getting those that are registered to come out and vote. Now, another point I'd like to make in this instant registration, or this election day registration, which is called universal registration, but it's not that at all. It's you can come in and register under the original proposal of Senator Vice President Mondale at every voting place you could register. And they never think of what that does to some candidate who has worked like the dickens to be elected to office, and let's say it's for the state legislature, gone all out, invested his time and his money, and he could well be robbed of that election by fraudulent voters. And under the Mondale proposal, there'd be nothing easier in the world than to go around and you could vote at seven different polling places. They'd never catch you at the time. Now, sure, they might catch you later on.
But the
election's over. And in our state, we have election after election determined by tiny percentages and tiny number of votes.
What did you win for governor the first time?
First time I won by 398 votes out of 350,000. And we have many legislators who win by 10, 9. We had a big contest, and we've had had a tie election in one of our towns, and absolutely tied, 397 votes apiece for moderators. Well, those are the people who shouldn't be robbed of their real efforts by this opening the way to fraud. And the people who are closest to it, from the states, the secretaries of state, have nearly unanimously opposed this effort. And finally, I'd like to say is that I don't see why the administration spends their time and energy on something that is of such little consequence.
Because it will guarantee Democrats will never be thrown out of office.
I don't know whether it will do that. I don't think so. But to come up with a bill like this that gets everybody angry makes no sense when you're trying to plunge on to get something done
it's
in the
really federal government. It's really irrelevant,
isn't it? It's really irrelevant. Right. And why Mondale races around spending his energy in this area, doesn't make much sense to me.
We're gradually getting into a debate now over the value of the all-volunteer military force. And as former Secretary of Navy, now member of the Senate, what is your view of the effort to have a purely volunteer, not drafted, military force?
I think, Joe, there's no question but what this has proven to be a success. Not only are our enlistments practically on target, in some cases in excess of targets, our strength is on target, but more important than that is the quality of the people we are getting, which you can register by various indicia. Percentage of high school graduates that are enlisting in the Army is higher than it was before under the draft setup. Furthermore, we have far less problems of racial problems, drug, and of disciplinary problems because you're getting people who want to be there. And to suggest that we'd go back to a draft setup seems to me ridiculous, because who are you going to draft? We can't draft everybody. There's not room for them. So therefore, you then have to go either to some selectivity system in which you would those who are going on to their educations, you wouldn't interrupt that, so you end up with the poor and the less educated, or else you go to some kind of a lottery system, which really gets people angry. Why, by the luck of the draw, should A, be spend 2-3 years in the military service, and B, not? Now, people say, oh, well, if we went back to the draft, it would be a lot cheaper. Well, it would not be a lot cheaper. There's no suggestion that we're going to cut the pay of these people. The only saving might be in some of the bonuses that we pay, re-enlistment bonuses or combat arms bonuses, but that is rather minor. It's perhaps $300 million a year, but on the other side, you'd have to set up a whole new expensive draft system so that when the net savings with going to a draft, back to the draft, would perhaps be a couple of $300,000 a year. But it's not worth it for the turmoil and for the reduction in quality you'd get.
Senator Chafee, you're a member of the Intelligence Committee.
I am, yes.
And having been Secretary of Navy, you have a good working knowledge of the role of intelligence. Has our intelligence capacity, our intelligence ability been hurt by the developments of the last year or so, and especially the drive in this country for opening everything up?
I think that, I think it unquestionably has been damaged to some extent, but I think that with the appointment of Admiral Turner, who's a real professional military man, I knew him very well. We worked together when I was in the Navy Department very, very closely. He was my naval assistant when I was secretary. He was then a captain, and everybody knew he had the talent and ability to do a marvelous job in anything he undertook. But I think what we've got to reconcile ourselves to in this country is that we're not dealing in a Sunday school picnic affair in this contest with the Soviets.
The world is not an open society.
Unfortunately, it's not. And after each war the United States gets in, we think that's the last war. We've now proven how futile it is to engage in slaughter and killing. And we think that's the end of it. And when you think that from the end of World War I to World War II was less than 25 years, now we've gone some 30 years, from 45, well, we've gone up nearly 34 years, 33 years, with peace, but that's come about because we've been prepared to keep our military forces strong, and we've just got to keep our intelligence capabilities strong, not just because in the event of a war, but also in event of all kinds of dealings in, say, the SALT talks. How do we know what the Soviets have got unless we have a good intelligence system?
You were governor. Today I hear a great deal about the burdens of the federal government, the burdens that the federal government superimposes on states and local jurisdictions. Do you feel that the federal government is becoming too pervasive, that it's settling into the state and county and city and town areas too much?
No, I don't think so. I think actually there's been somewhat of a tendency the other way as they've gone to these so-called block grants, where the money revenue sharing, where the money goes to the state and they say, look, you use this for your highest priority. The priority of Alaska and Arkansas might not be the same. Now, in some cases, there are strong examples of how demands have been placed on the states that they find difficult to meet and with no adequate financing. For instance, the recent implementation by the Secretary of HEW of these laws pertaining to the handicap, that every school system must take the handicap into their normal schools, and ramps must be built, and all those things, yet no money accompanies it. Well, I think that will be overcome in a while, and I myself think those regulations should have been adopted. But basically, the quality of a governor or a mayor can make a tremendous difference to a state. The big brother federal government isn't running everything. Thank goodness.
Senator Chafee, what kind of marks would you give Jimmy Carter as president? How do you appraise the Carter administration?
Well, I think the Carter administration so far is doing fine. I agree with many of the things he's doing, his efforts. I think his courage in, say, the water projects that many people criticize him for, I think he did what he felt was right. I feel that his efforts to maintain a balanced budget or work toward it are absolutely right. I believe that the whole solution to a big solution to unemployment is to lick this inflation so that country has a sense of ease and reassurance that and business is prepared to invest in their industry or their businesses because they know that the dollar isn't going to be worth 50 cents 5 years from now. And what causes high unemployment is terrible inflation. And I believe that the president is very aware of that and is working toward it. So I would give him good marks.
In the three special House elections which have been held so far this year, your party's won two. Looking ahead a year and 3 or 4 months from now, what would you expect the campaign thrust of the Republicans who are out and who are trying to get in will be?
That's a tough question at this time because so much happens in 18 months. So much happens in a week. You remember President Nixon won that election by that landslide, and I think 18 months later was he out of office? So that these things turn so quickly. But I think one of the arguments of the Republicans will be it just isn't good for the nation to have two lopsided an administration and Congress. When you get the president of one party and then he's got 66% of both branches of Congress, well, it's better to have some people around kind of watching the store. So I think that'll be one of the arguments, but in so many of the elections it's really determined by the quality of the candidates themselves.
It's become more a personality thing now.
Well, I don't want to say personality suggested as well who's got the best eye pan or smile, but I don't think it's that. I think it's the ability to present the issues.
Person over party. More than it was 25
right.
years ago.
And I have another theory, and that is that the public is way ahead of the politicians, that the politicians cater to prejudices and passions, and the people are way ahead of that. Now, I'll let you know more about that in 6 years from now. But So I think...
5 years from this November.
Yeah, that's right. I think the key thing is for the Republicans to just get good candidates. Now, you take those two special elections we won. We won in that election in Minnesota because we had the far better candidate. He was identified with the people. He was from the area. He was familiar with their problems. He was a farmer in a farming area, and he just was the best. I'm not so familiar with the election in the state of Washington.
How frustrating, Senator Chafee, is it to be in the minority?
In the Senate, it's not that frustrating because if you look at the votes, they just you don't really get the straight party votes. And it would be fun to have the potential of being a committee chairman or preside over the subcommittee or whatever it is. And it's always the Democrats that do this. And so therefore they get the publicity. It's known as the Church Committee or it's known as the Irvin Committee or whatever it is. So all that helps them be reelected. But I don't find it that frustrating because of the diversity of the votes, the cutting across the political spectrum.
Senator Chafee, I have a final question for you in just 1 minute. Senator Chafee, there's a tendency among young people today, I think, to be disenchanted about government and about politics. What do you say to young people who are cynical about politics and politicians?
I say to them that, sure, there have been those who have strayed from the path and have given the profession a bad name. But you got to remember two things. One, that there are really some marvelous people who are seriously taking their responsibilities and working to make this country a better place in political life. And secondly, there's no area that influences the lives of our citizens, be it in a town or on the state level or in the nation. There's nobody who influences those people's lives for good or for evil more than those in public life. And so therefore, if we want a better world, the young people want clean air, they want clean water, they want a freer competition. If they want all those things, then they've got to get the people in public office who will bring those things about. And the person who's of U.S. Steel or the biggest department store in town, he isn't the person that makes the clean air or clean water come about. It's their elected senators and representatives and mayors and governors who make it possible.
You still maintain your enthusiasm, haven't you?
Oh, yes. No question about that.
Have you ever found it challenged?
No, I haven't, because they talk about the young people being turned off and all that, but I don't find that true. And they find polls show the rating of a politician is somewhat below that of a used car dealer, or maybe, but I don't find it that way, and I think the proof of the pudding is look at the re-election statistics in the House of Representatives from both parties of those who sought re-election. 96% of them were reelected. Now, in that case, it didn't show that politicians were in such bad odor.
Senator Chafee, I've enjoyed talking with you. In just about 1 minute, we're going to open our phone line here, and we'll probably have a lot of questions and comments which have been spurred by what you've been talking about. Thank you very much for being my guest on McCaffrey's Washington.
Thank you very much, Joe.